Thank you for tuning in here at the Saturday Light Brigade. We have a couple guests here. Gabby, you want to say hello?
Hi.
You're 13?
Yes.
Where do you go to school?
I go to State Street Elementary.
And where's that?
That's in Baden.
Well, it's nice to have you here. Baden is out in Beaver County, and you're getting to see behind the scenes of a radio station, which is great. We'll maybe involve you as we interview the person who's going to be performing us in a minute. Let's meet who's next to you. And what's your name?
Mark.
How old are you, Mark?
I'm 11.
And where do you go to school?
State Street Elementary.
And I know you really wanted to see behind the scenes here at the radio station.
Yep.
And you made my day. The first thing you said is, it looks exactly like I expected it would look. I heard you say that as you came in, and I'm glad because I'm glad it looks like you thought it would look. What got you interested in radio?
Oh, well, I wanted to do acting, and I wanted to be a cameraman and go, like, behind the scenes and shoot films and everything.
Well, that's great. I'm very glad you're here. And there's one more person here. Do you want to – we'll have to pivot that microphone over to you or use the purple mic.
No.
Or Gabby can be your spoke. Who is that?
Hi, this is my sister, Ramona.
Ramona. Well, I'm glad you're here. Now, we have a guest who is – up here from North Carolina. He also is going to be in Millvale tomorrow with Music Night on Jupiter at the Fun House at Mr. Small's. Now, I don't know, you know, he said maybe I should introduce him.
Let's hold off on the introduction.
Okay, so mystery guest.
Kind of see how this thing goes. This is an old Flat and Scruggs team. Steamboat took my daddy to New Orleans. He got killed in a poker game downtown. Steamboat took my daddy to New Orleans. Some crooked gambler shot him down. Daddy took the steamboat, didn't take me along. I've been sitting here thinking all day long. I'm gonna ride that steamboat, take my gun along. I'll get that man that done my daddy wrong, Lord, yeah. Get that man that done my daddy wrong. Steamboat took my daddy to New Orleans. Daddy was pretty good with a deck of cards. Said he'd get rich in New Orleans, where the games were fast and the cash was cold and hard. You can't make no money when the deck of cards are stacked. Steamboat never brought my daddy back. I'm gonna ride that steamboat, take my gun along. I'll get that man that done my daddy wrong, Lord, yeah. Get that man that done my daddy wrong. Steamboat took my daddy to New Orleans. I know he wanted that money for us kids. Steamboat took daddy to New Orleans. Now mama won't forgive him for what he did. Daddy took the steamboat, didn't take mom along. Now all she does is cry all day long. I'm gonna ride that steamboat, take my gun along. I'll get that man that done my daddy wrong, Lord, yeah. Get that man that done my daddy wrong. I'll get that man that done my daddy wrong. That'd be enough of that.
Yeah, I think we can reveal that this is Jim Avett playing right now. And it's really nice to have you back. We were tickled when you were here before. So many great songs.
I can remember being here, but I couldn't remember anything that we had done. So I figured if I couldn't remember it, you couldn't remember it either.
No.
So we just let that one go. I wanted to play Steamboat because I absolutely love coming to Pittsburgh. You got big water up here, and there are any number of stories down big water. We don't have like three rivers coming together that makes big water like you got. But I like coming to Pittsburgh. Fine folks, blue collar people, my kind of group. I played up and down the Ohio River and have made a lot of friends up and down the Ohio River.
That's great.
Anyway.
And your home is where now?
Concord, North Carolina.
And
it's 20 miles out of Charlotte. Where we live, you would never know that Charlotte's there. We have 60 acres. We have cows. We have pigs, snakes, any kind of booger you can imagine lives on our land, yeah.
And you have hills and trees, not unlike Pittsburgh's, if you're in the area. I think you are.
Yeah.
I mean, the topography is very similar.
I grew up in the foothills of North Carolina. My formative years, my daddy was a preacher. We moved around, not a great deal, but I grew up above Hickory, up toward Lenoir in the foothills. And I heard you asking one of the earlier ones, why did you start music? I really started music because it was more of a self-defense than anything else. It was something to do. And we weren't poor by any means, but we weren't rich by any means either. So instead of going to movies and whatnot, we'd sit down with some instruments and try to make music. And it was a lot of it was bad music. But I grew up around Doc Watson, and I heard one of the tunes you were doing a while ago.
Oh, it was one of Doc's, Freight Train Boogie, maybe.
He also did... stranger traveling through this world of woe. There is no sadness, toil, or danger to that fair land to which I go. I'm going there to see my father, all my friends who have gone on. I'm just going over Jordan. I'm just going over home. I could do on, could go on with that, but that just came up. Did when I was learning to play a guitar, and I still am. I got a guitar when I was 13. It was 1960. I was born in 1947. I'll be 70 in 2 months. When I was growing up, nobody taught guitar, and we couldn't afford it to pay for it if it had. So it was a watch and learn kind of thing.
Where'd you get your guitar?
The first guitar that I had, my daddy, who was a preacher and a fairly poor man, but a fairly smart man. He saved the money he made. He went to a pawn shop and he bought a guitar for $5. A man made maybe $1 an hour at that time, and that was 5 hours worth of work he put in a guitar for me. A man now maybe makes $15 an hour. That's $75. You can go to the pawn shop and buy a guitar for $75. You won't get much, but you'll get a guitar you can play. And it was great. It was absolutely great. I sat on the couch with this guitar. It was a big orchestra face. It had cracks in it. It looked like it had been painted with a 5 bucket of tar and a pine limb. I mean, it had paint all over it. But it was great, and I didn't have any idea. My brother is 6 years older than I am. He was then, and he still is. He walked through. He was going to Carolina, and he was my hero. I was 13, and I thought 19-year-olds knew everything. Later, I found out they don't know much of anything, and neither the 13-year-olds. But anyway, he came by, and he said, "You want me to show you how to play that, boy?" And I said, "Oh, would you please?" So he showed me three chords. And with those three chords, I started playing. I was forced into finding a fourth chord. Got to play in dream, 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 dream. And I was missing something. I didn't know what it was. And I got to fooling around with that guitar, and I found an A minor. Mm-hmm. And that was my fourth chord.
I was now unleashed on the world with four chords, and I had not enough. I wasn't smart enough to be scared of anything. You just take your four chords and get out there and get after it. So for years with those four chords, that's pretty well all I knew.
Well, that's Woody Guthrie always said, right? If any more than three is showing off.
There is a book. There is a book called Three Chords and the Truth, which came out maybe 15 years ago. And it tells, do you realize that there are over 11,600 chords on this fretboard? And I knew three of them, and that was enough. You know? But anyway, I haven't got a whole lot better on the guitar, but I've learned a lot of songs, and the reason they like for me to get up is because I don't mind getting up in front of people and singing.
Well, I was going to say, you're a natural at doing that. Did that come from church with your dad?
My dad, my brothers, my neighbors, I had heroes. One of the differences between today's world and the world that I grew up in, we had lots of heroes, World War II guys that were in our church, that were teachers in our school. These guys did things the way things needed to be done, and they taught us, my generation, how the right way of doing things. That doesn't mean we did them the right way. It means that we knew what they were. So I see in my older age, the good thing about getting old is you have an awful lot of experiences and a lot of lies you can tell. And the really good part is that there's a short window that I've got to tell these, because all the people that could refute them, they're dead. And pretty soon I'm going to be dead too, and the next man gets a shot at it, and that's the way it ought to be. That's the way that life works, and I'm very at ease with that. But at this point in my life, I see most everything as a teaching opportunity. My children, they accuse me of learning to play a guitar so I can tell stories. And the older I get, my shows involve a lot of stories. But anyway,
there's nothing
wrong
with that.
Whatever I've learned, I want to pass on to you. If you see me doing anything that you want to learn how to do, I'll be glad to tell you how I do it. It's not to take it to the grave. I'll leave it here with you.
Do you have any questions that you want to ask Jim, Gabby? It looks
any,
like
any
you,
questions
you've got
that he
something.
Can answer.
Yeah.
You know?
When you first started everything with the guitar, how did you get in? Like, how did your feeling to loving that guitar?
How did it feel? What?
How? Like, you were so interested in that guitar. Like, how excited were you?
The original guitar,
yes.
You were describing.
Yes.
I did not realize my mother and father felt like my brother and sister should know something about music, as I think my children should and their children should and you should, because music fits together perfectly. It's like mathematics. It may not be the way that you think it ought to fit together, but this is the way it goes. And the really good thing about a guitar or any musical instrument, you can play it on a very simplistic level. I mean a level that is on the front porch. And you can play. I have a couple of sons that are fairly famous. When they started out, I told them I wanted them to play the best they could. I don't care what you're going to be. I want you to be the best that you can be. You can be a trash man. I want you to be the best one. I don't care. It's not my life. It's yours. If it's interesting music, people will come to listen. But you use music, my way of seeing it, you use music and you write music to affect people's lives. That is the reason you write music. It's not for money. It's not for notoriety. I told them if what they wrote was good enough to draw a crowd, fine. If not, we'll sit on the front porch. But music is important, and I was excited about picking up a guitar and making music with it and growing with it. And one of the things, one of the growth in a guitar, I started out playing a guitar with my right hand just beating it up over here, you know. Oh, yeah. I think everybody starts that. Being from where I was at, I heard people picking individual strings. I'm the kind of guy that I like to hear individual strings. I don't like to hear a bunch of beating on it. So I got to looking at people that were picking. Do you know anything about music?
I do.
Okay.
I've
Okay. You know what a measure is? A 4-4 measure has four equal parts in it. Imagine, close your eyes and imagine that the four things are 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Now, that doesn't get you very far with a guitar, but if I go 1, 2, 3, and in the fourth put 2, it will be 1, 2, 3, 4. And it sounds like... That doesn't sound like much until you speed it up. The way in a finger pop. Or two. People think you know what you're doing. You don't really know what you're doing, but you just sort of fall in there and do it. And pretty soon you get Willie Nelson. Last night I went out and I knocked at my door. I called to my love as I oft had before. I knocked and I knocked, but no answer there came. No kisses greet me, no voice called my name. And I could not believe it was true, Lord, Lord. No, I could not believe it was true. My eyes filled with tears and I must face 10 years. And I could not believe it was true, or something like that. That's how excited I got about it. I think we drifted, but I hope I answered your question.
Gemma Avid is going to be at the Fun House at Mr. Small's. Great venue. I understand they have great food. It's tomorrow night at 6, a nice early show, Music Night on Jupiter, sponsoring the show. Tim Wolfson is here.
Doors open at 6, music goes at 7. And I have been put up in the opener spot, which is fine with me. I play with a lawyer down in North Carolina, and he's about my same age, and we'll argue. If we share the stage, we'll argue. Who's going to go first? You can just go ahead and get going home and get to sleep. You know, there's nothing after 10 o'clock I want to stay up for anyway, but anyhow.
I relate very much. It's really great to have you here. Let's have you. I want to be sure you get a chance to do another song or so. What would you like to play?
I had Tim Wolfson asked me what I had prepared, and I didn't know I was going to prepare much. What I wanted to do was a song, a murder song.
Well, that's fine.
There are songs all over. I travel all over the country. And every place has an interesting story. If you can find the person that knows the story and they're willing to tell it, then it's worth every bit of it. There is a murder that happened a long time ago. If you stood on my front porch and threw a rock 4 times, you'd probably hit this pile of stones that there's a pile of bones under it. This guy killed somebody. The police came and decided they needed to hang him, so they did, and then they put him under these stones. In the story, if you write songs, you don't name them name because their relatives will want to come and kill you. What you do is you change that around, and I just call him Old Bones in this one. It's over in the pasture where these bones are. Let me... preface this song by explaining. In here, I use a phrase that says, doesn't a man have a right to protect what he owns? I'm not talking about him owning his wife. I'm talking about him owning the relationship and the right to have that relationship without being interfered with, which there was another guy came in and interfered with it. Over in the pasture where the green grass grows, there's a big pile of stones on a little pile of bones. Ain't nobody knows about this, and nobody cares. I was standing there wondering about the rocks and such, and an old man came up to me and told me about bones is bad luck. Old Bones heard a man bragging about messing with his wife. He told some others he'd pay with his life. If he found him out, he would shoot to kill. It didn't take long, the guilty party was found. Old Bones sealed the deal, left him dead on the ground.
Well, Big John Law rode up in a gang. They arrested him and said he should hang. And right here, I think we come to a question that ought to be heard. Does a man have the right to protect what he owns? Ain't that God's way of thinning the herd? So they hung old Bones. He said goodbye to his wife. For a fit of rage, he paid with his life. Ain't it funny how we react to strife? Old Bones paid the price for what he had done. The guilty man paid for just having some fun. I ain't judging here what's right and what's wrong. Just a thought about how society moves along. Seems to me only the guilty should pay with their bones. Just wondering here what's right and who's wrong, and who ought to be under all of them stones.
Jim, Avid, who wrote that, Jim?
I did.
I thought you did.
It sounds like something I'd write.
No. It just sounded like you were telling the story. Mark, do you have anything you'd like to ask Mr. Avid?
Is that pile of bones still there today?
Two of the guy's relatives have come to me, and we have gone out looking for them. One of them used to hunt. He's about my age. He's about 68 or 69. He used to hunt out there on that property. And when he was 15 years old, he stood on that pile of bones, and his grandfather told him what his great-great-grandfather had done. That pile is out there somewhere, and if we can find it, they want to put a monument. It's on my land. I have no problem with that. And I told him, you really need to put a monument out here anyway. If it's not on the exact site, it's within hollering distance of it. And if his kids want to know where it's at, you're going to have to mark it.
Yeah, that was a great question. And I like that line, pay with your bones. That's a great line.
I was wondering just who ought to be under all that pile of stones. It would make sense to me that the guilty party probably ought to be paying for it. But anyway.
Yeah. You can catch Jim tomorrow. I want to be sure you know this because Millvale, Mr. Smalls, the funhouse at Mr. Smalls, which is Mr. Smalls has a number of different venues there. This is kind of an intimate venue. There's food available. It's relatively a new part of Mr. Smalls, and Jim Avid will be there tomorrow to entertain you with some stories and more. Do you find stories pouring out of you sometimes when you're talking to folks that you kind of almost forgot you remembered?
Oh, yeah. When you, a very unique way of living is actually talking to people. And the interaction of talking to you to me will bring up things that I haven't thought about in some time. But they're there. And sometimes when you mention stones, I would think of that song. I haven't played that song in a while. But there are, I say hundreds, there are tens of stories that you need to hear. And if you don't hear them from me, you're probably not going to hear them. Or somebody like me who will sit down, some old guy who will sit down and talk to you about it. If you want to know what it's like to be 70, let me tell it to you this way. If I got a second, I can do this.
Of course.
When I was in 1975, I was living in Wyoming, and I've always had old guy friends. They have such good stories and such good lies to tell. I always hung around them. I had two old guy friends out there that were 85 in 1975. They had been born about 1890. One of them had done some growing up in Ohio before he came to Wyoming. He told me when he was 10 years old, about 1900, had belonged to a young man's organization, sort of like the Boy Scouts. The Boy Scouts weren't founded until 1911 or 12 or somewhere along in there. Anyway, there were a lot of young people's organizations. He was a part of one of them, and it was their duty on Veterans Day to escort a veteran. That year, in 1900, he escorted a Civil War veteran. I can't remember whether that guy, whether that guy had shook hands with, heard a speech by, or merely seen Abraham Lincoln.
Wow.
Now, I didn't know Abraham Lincoln. I'm not that old. But I knew a man that knew a man who, by God, knew the man. And any Southerner who is any American who is a serious student of the Civil War would know that Abraham Lincoln is the best friend that this country ever had. If he had lived, things would be different, because he was actually a leader. He was so much more than those that came immediately behind him. I don't know, they may be kin to you, but it's the truth, and I'll speak the truth. They say you can get the truth from two places. One, from the very young, before they are shamed into telling lies, and from the very old, who don't care anymore.
I've never heard that, and I like it.
Well, you also can get the truth from yoga pants and
spandex.
Alcohol. And
yeah.
But I mean, you know, that really doesn't count.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I think about that when I sometimes will meet somebody whose father knew somebody whose father knew a slave. In fact, Mr. Wilson, who owns a rib joint not too far from here, the recipe he uses is a recipe from a slave. Mr. Wilson's probably, oh gosh, I hope I don't get this wrong. I'm guessing he's about 90, maybe in his early 90s right now.
You should be proud of it.
Yeah, you start to do the math and you realize that I'm very connected to history. And we're such a young country, too, that those connections are.
I knew an old man when I was a kid. I was probably 5 years old. His daddy had fought in the Civil War.
Wow.
That many generations, it's not so far back. You can look back and you can find, and a lot of times if you're looking into your genealogy, probably you're going to have some bones fall out of the closet. And it may not be some bones. It may be the whole skeleton that falls out on you. You might not want to look too far, but anyway.
Well, I think it's good to look and see what's there. In fact, I went online just for the fun of it. You know, my mom and dad are passed, and I was curious, does the internet have any record of my mother on it? You know, my mother born in 1930. And sure enough, there was some graduate student research paper that had this little footnote with my mom's maiden name on it referring to her. And I just love that.
There is a website called findagrave.com. Within the last year, I found a great uncle of mine who died in 1893. A great uncle. His grave is beside an airport in Anson County, North Carolina. I didn't even know Anson County had an airport. It's very small. And this grave is beside his wife, and it's up in the woods. And I expect the last person that looked at that grave was 50 years ago, maybe. Maybe.
Wow.
But find a grave, if you know anything about them, name, maybe what state, whatever, you can find it. Find a Grave is a great app.
Yeah, and somebody has all the census records digitized from census takers, and you can actually see, and I was able to see my grandparents, their household, who was in the household at the time.
Exactly.
I don't think it was in their writing. I think the census taker
wrote. My great-great-grandmother was a Creek Indian. That through the census, yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
This is Jim Avett, and you can see him and hear him tomorrow night, Sunday, January 8th, in Millville. Doors open at 6. Music starts at 7 o'clock at Mr. Small's, or at the Funhouse at Mr. Small's. The whole joint is called Mr. Small's Funhouse, but the subset of the venue that you're in is the Funhouse at Mr. Small's.
And if some of these people will come out, I'll be there.
Yeah.
I'm coming if they are.
Yeah, you're there regardless.
I would rather play for 10 people that want to hear the music than 1,000 that don't. I played for both of them, and it don't make any difference what it pays. I'm at the point in my life I want to play for people who want to hear it. I want to thank your listeners, because these are part of the 10% that actually support creativity, whether it's music or art or sculpture or poetry. About 10% of the people will actually put their money where their mouth is. The rest of them don't really care what's playing in the elevator or what's playing at the grocery store. And this is unfortunate, because young singer-songwriters, not me, but young singer-songwriters deserve a chance, and they can't make enough the way digital signals are. They can't make enough to pay the plumber, so you might as well be the plumber if you can't pay them. If you can't make enough making music, I am very, very adamant about this. We've got to find some way to protect creativity so that they can afford the gas to get to the next gig, so they can afford to eat, to live till tomorrow, because there's some really good singer-songwriters. There's some really good ones in Pittsburgh, and there are some really great ones that are falling out because you can't make a living at it.
No, it can be really dejecting. And what you said, and it's kind of like math, again, you know, you get a choice. You can have 10 people listening with a passion level of 100, or you can have 100 people listening with a passion level of 10.
A 2.
yeah, I would rather have 10 people listening with a passion level of 100 at any time.
Usually the supporters don't throw things or get up and leave during the show. But, I mean, that means a lot.
Now, you've been playing as you've been traveling, right?
Oh, yeah. I do 40 to 50 shows a year.
Well, I think we're lucky to have you playing in Pittsburgh, because that's a—
When he asked if I'd come over here, I said, I can't wait. Yeah. I cannot wait.
It's just terrific to have you here. Do you want to play another song? I'd love to hear you.
I was sitting out in the green room waiting on this, and there's an old song. My grandfather's clock was too tall for the shelf, so it stood 90 years on the floor. It was taller by half than the old man himself, but it weighed not a penny, weighed more. It was bought on the morn that the old man was born. It was always his treasure and pride. But it stopped short, never to go again, when the old man died. My grandfather said, of those he could hire, not a servant so faithful he found. For it wasted no time, and it had but one desire, at the close of each week to be wound. And it kept in its place, not a frown upon its face, and its hands never hung by its side. But it stopped short, never to go again, when the old man died. 90 years without slumbering, tick-tock, tick-tock, 5 seconds numbering, tick-tock, tick-tock, let's stop short, never to go again, when the old man died.
You know, as you were singing that, I was picturing you singing that to your kids. Did you ever do that?
Oh, yeah. Susie and I went camping, 15, 20 years ago. And it was up in September. And in the campgrounds, there's not a whole lot to do after the sun goes down. So you start a fire, and you go out, and you sing some love songs to your wife of 48 years, by the way. What a terrific girl. But anyway, I was singing to Susie. And some people from Houston, Texas, were on one side in the next campsite, and some people from Ohio on the other side. They'd moved over close. They were as close to our campsite without getting on. I said, if you don't have anything else to do, just come on in here and get around the fire. You've already ruined this anyway. So they all came in, and I played Grandfather's Clock. This woman from Houston said, God, that's a great song. I said, yeah, it is. She said, did you write that? And I said, you've never heard that song? I said, it's been out a while. She said, I've never heard it. And it is a great song. Did you write it? And I said, are you sure you've never heard that? She said, no, I've never heard it. I said, yes, I wrote that. This is what singer-songwriters do.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it's the
sure,
folk process.
I'll claim that one. If I had written that, I wouldn't be in a studio. I would be on the Riviera somewhere, laid back, you know, spending my money.
I don't know who wrote that, but that song sure goes back.
Two guys from Ireland wrote it in the late 1880s. They owned a hotel, and one of them died, and the other wrote that song.
Huh, wow. I would never have guessed that. This is Jim Avitt, who we're talking to. You mentioned Doc Watson earlier. Did you get a chance to interact with him much? Or?
Our family is intertwined with Doc Watson by music. The boys much more than I. I play Merlefest. I've been lucky enough to do it for the last 5 years. They like me because I sing gospel, and I love to sing gospel. I sing gospel in bars. I sing it in churches. They want me up there on Sunday at 11 o'clock to do an hour's worth of gospel, and it's not me you should come and hear. It's the people in my band. One of them is Allie Parker, who is from Edinburgh, and she lives in this town, and she'll be with me tomorrow night. One of the reasons I came up here is she and I need to play some of the tunes we're going to play tomorrow night together, because we're going to do three or four high-end shows. Merlefest is going to be one of them. But we have a new gospel. The Avitt brothers and the Avitt sister and the Avitt daddy have a new gospel album that's going to be coming out in April.
That's terrific.
I don't know. It's a whole lot better than I thought it was. It was going to be.
Oh, no. I talk about legacy and family. I mean, to have an album like that is just a wonderful thing. And it's going to introduce people to one another, too, I think.
You ask about Doc. I'll give you a five-minute rundown on the way the boys tie in. Seth was probably 14 years old, and he was hearing rock and roll. And he was, as most young people, they have a lot of energy. This is the reason adults don't like kids. They have so much energy. You know, that's why they hate kids. But anyhow, we had energy at one time, and we're throwing ours away just like you're throwing yours away, and that's okay. But anyway, Seth was getting into rock and roll, and I wanted him to know that there was another kind of music. So a friend of mine had written a song about Merle, Doc's son, that died, and is what Merlefest is named after. When Merle Watson died, Doc lost his son, his guide, his picking partner, his friend. He lost it all, and it was devastating. This friend of mine wrote a song, which Doc heard and invited him up to his house, and they got along. He was about the same level of incompetence of playing the guitar that I am, but they got along just famously right off the bat. They used that song to close every night of Merlefest for the last 25 years. They've used that song. Anyway, this guy called me, and he said, you want to go up to Winston-Salem tonight and hear Doc play? He said, I'm going to open for him. And, you know, I said, not really. I said, I've been around Doc a lot enough, and he's a great talent. He was a great talent. But I said, I've got a kid that really ought to hear some of this. So I took Seth over to his house, to Wayne's house, and Wayne drove up to the Doc's house. I told Seth before he left, I said, this is the way things are going to be. In the first 2 minutes, he's either going to take you in like a grandchild, or he's going to tell you to shut up and sit in the corner. I said, you be on your best behavior. I didn't have to tell our children that. Our children are on their best behavior in front of other people. They were fine with us. Anyway, he went up and picked with Doc. And when I got up there, Seth came running up to me. He said, Daddy, Daddy, Daddy. He said, he's just like my granddaddy. He said, this is great. He said, I've got a picture of me sitting in his chair with his two Grammys or Oscars or whatever they give for good music, Grammys. He said, he's got two of them. And I'm sitting there with a picture taken with them on my leg. And to this day, when Doc died a couple years ago,
yeah,
Guns and Garden, the magazine, whatever, there's a magazine, they asked Seth to write his remembrances of that meeting.
Mm.
And he saw it from that side, and I saw it from over here. And, yes, I've been around Doc Watson pretty well all my life. we pick in a similar way.
How old was Merle when he passed?
He was
a young guy.
Relatively young.
I can't remember.
In his 30s, maybe.
Yeah, he was very young, so just a tragedy. I never thought about it the way you just put it. Mostly thought about it in terms of losing a son, but to also lose your intimate,
he lost it all.
You know, picking partner and guide as well is just an amazing.
Well, Merle Fest
tragedy
is a great tribute to the Watson family. They have managed to keep string music alive and make it popular. Hmm. They have instilled it in lots of people.
Would you play a gospel song? Do you feel okay doing it?
Yeah. Let me do a short run of one.
Okay.
This person that wrote this song was named Fanny J. Crosby. She lived from 1805 to maybe 1905, almost 100 years. She wrote over 8,000 songs and poems.
Yeah, I know this name.
She was blind. She was blind.
Huh.
What a talent. Let's do it here. Pass me not, O gentle Savior. Hear my humble cry. While on others thou art calling, do not pass me by. Savior, Savior, hear my humble cry. While on others thou art calling, do not pass me by.
Great song.
God, that's a great song.
Yeah, I've heard that done by other folks. Mark or Gabby, do you have another question of these? I don't want to put you on the spot, but if you do, just lift that microphone up higher, closer
to your granddaddy, okay?
To your talking place. There you go.
What got you into singing?
Oh, that's a good question. By the way, Gabby is from Baden and is here with Mark and
Ramona.
Thank you, Ramona.
My mother was a concert pianist. The talent for the Avett brothers may come through me. It didn't stop with me, but my mother was the kind of woman that three rooms away, I'd be practicing a fiddle. And I'd hit a sour note, and she'd say, "That's a B flat you're looking for." And I'm going, "How do you know that?" Most guys my age grew up singing in church. Most of us, whether we wanted to or not, were going to church. And so gospel was right up front. Most guys my age learned to sing in gospel. I was in chorus in high school. I went to the Navy, and in boot camp, they had a choral group. I got in that because I got extra leave on it. I got some time off with it. But I have always sang. I've been in a number of bands, been kicked out of most of the ones that I'm in, because I expect a lot out of myself, and I expect a lot out of you, probably more than you expect out of yourself. But if I say I'm going to be there at 7 o'clock, I'll be there at 10 till or quarter till. I won't be there at 5 after if you ain't there, because I don't know where you are. I've got other things I want to do. But the singing part, if you want to get good at it, harmony, what I miss more than anything else here today is somebody to sing harmony with, because I think harmony is the key. I think you can judge how happy somebody is as to how much harmony they have in their life. I think I love harmony in music. Everly Brothers, Leuvens, Beatles. I love harmony in music, but I love it in colors. I love it in sights. I love it in relationships. And I think that you can tell just how successful a person is, how happy they're going to be as to how much harmony they got in their life.
Yeah, when,
but then again, what I know, but anyway.
Well, when people are saying, you know, what is a concert? Well, it's in concert with another person. It's meant to be a group. It's meant to be a collaboration.
It's a group picture.
Yeah, it's people. And it's not, there is a lot of one-way media these days where, you know, you just look at a screen. But that's one beautiful thing about live music is, if you go, when you go and see Jim tomorrow,
you get all the mistakes with it.
Yeah. Well, but yeah, that too. But your performance will be unique and distinct based in large part on who is listening along with you as you play.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to make a huge difference. So that to me is
incredible. One of the reasons I got into singing, I learned a lot of my – what grade are you in?
I'm in
seventh grade. I learned a lot of my seventh grade history in music. I believe it was Johnny Horton that came out in about 1960 or 61. 1814, you take a little trip. Yeah, well, I heard that one. And I heard, yeah, you fought all the way, Johnny Rib, Johnny Rib. I heard also the Comanche was Custer's horse. You know who Custer was? Custer was... the leader of the 7th Cavalry and got in a big fight with the Indians out west and the
Battle of Little Bighorn.
The Battle of Little Bighorn. You'll hear about it. But there was a song on that same album. Comanche, you Comanche, you fought hard, Comanche, you tried. You were a brave soldier, so hold your head up high. For even the bravest sometimes must fall. Comanche, the brave horse, you gave your all. I learned Battle of New Orleans. Jimmy Driftwood wrote that song.
Yeah.
I learned about... PT-109 at that time, John F. Kennedy's boat in the Second World War. I learned a bunch of songs, and they stuck with me, and I was able to use them in school because I would act like I was a literary person by the songs that I'd heard.
This hour has flown by. Thank you, both of you, all of you, for being here. And thanks to you, Jim.
Thanks so much.
Look for Jim Avett tomorrow night at the Fun House at Mr. Small's.
And don't expect an awful lot, and you won't be disappointed if you...